broken up a tightrope with Vaseline from my head to my feet. You got me looking in the blindfolds, but I know you got your hands all over me. So when all these invitations fail, just don't look back, cause I won't be there. Wiping out loud when I didn't ever know just what it was all about. Wiping out loud when I didn't ever know just why you pushed me around. I'm doing time inside of top of that tree. So when all this nighttime vision fails, I'll lose these chains and slip out of this jail.
Material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer. List of today's guests. Signing in chat room. Lining up news articles. Checking levels. Adjusting camera. Secure wire connection. Restart computer. Checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is. And she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Hello, welcome to a Tuesday from rainy Florida. We've the storms that have been going across the country, I think, has hit us now. So if you hear a dog barking, it's because Jackson's freaking out from the thunderstorms. First thunderstorms of the season, and he doesn't like it much. If you tuned in early, you heard some pre-show music. Today's theme was laughter in honor of Gotta Laugh, who's with us every Tuesday. Also in honor of the late night TV shows, which thankfully the Writers Guild and the writers came to an agreement in the wee hours of the morning, averting a strike, which is so good because, you know, they're our first line of defense, those late night comedy shows, first line of defense against Trump. You know, but we're going to start today with a guest. Hopefully we can get him on the line. I'm calling Ben Pallara. He's the campaign director of United for Care. I tried calling him a few minutes ago and got voicemail, but hopefully he's there now. Fingers crossed.
Hello.
Hey, Ben, it's Nicole Sandler calling. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We are live on the air. I'm calling, great, as I mentioned in the email, because I wanted to get an update on what's happening with our Florida medical marijuana laws. We to let the listeners in on it. In November, we passed Amendment 2, calling for medical marijuana. We got, I believe, 71% of the vote. And now the Florida legislative session is in the home stretch, and we've been waiting for them to come up with legislation to allow for cannabis dispensaries. And from what I've been able to glean, it's not going all that well. So I was hoping you could give us an update on what's happening.
Sure. Well, today the Florida House of Representatives passed House Bill 1397, which was their bill to implement Amendment 2, and it is a really, really bad piece of legislation.
Yeah.
It has gotten better. I joke that it only got better because they couldn't think of any ways to make it worse. But it is a really bad piece of legislation that is in many ways contrary to the letter and the spirit of the constitutional amendment that 71% of us passed. But ultimately really bad for patient access. It requires doctors to essentially write a prescription for marijuana, which is of course illegal under federal law and will result in very few doctors doing so. And the
wow.
ones that do so being the, you know, unethical kind of pill mill doctors. And it maintains Florida's current cartel system of marijuana growers, which is unique of any of the states that have medical marijuana laws, but you know, basically put patients into a stranglehold of a monopoly that will result in high costs and low quality and you know, few choices for patients in the state. So that bill was passed in near unanimity in the House today, and it goes over to the Senate, which I hope will significantly amend it and send it back to the House before the end of the week.
So do we know, are there any great senators who have been working on something to make this House bill better?
Well, I think the Senate is filled with quite a few members who have really been, you know, thoughtful and deliberate and productive on this issue. But the House simply has not been as reasonable. So, I mean, if the Senate were to pass the bill that they currently have, you know, it's not the bill that I would write. It's not our perfect world, but it is not bad. And it is a pretty good representation of the will of the people.
That's the Senate bill. Now the House bill, if I read correctly, and I could be sort of mixing up the two, it allowed for vaping and edibles, but no smoking of cannabis. Is that right?
Correct. Neither bills allow for smoking of cannabis.
Really?
The House bill prohibited smoking, eating and vaporizing marijuana until about a week ago.
Oh my goodness.
So that's what I said when I said, you know, the House bill had gotten better, but only because they couldn't find out any more ways to make it worse.
That's amazing. So so once this goes through, then do we have hope that it will get made better over time? Because it's one thing, you know, as you mentioned, 71% of Floridians voted for this amendment, but if it's still going to be prohibitive and everything's still going to be illegal, then obviously they're not fulfilling the will of the people.
Yeah, I mean, we have a rich and voluminous history here in Florida of the people passing popular mandates like medical marijuana, and then the legislature doing everything in their power to thwart the will of the people in their legislating. And fortunately, I mean, unfortunately, that's been happening. Fortunately, we also have a pretty strong history of the courts ultimately stepping in and deciding in favor of the voters. Now, I don't want to go to court. I would rather just see something pass that we can all live with and that can, you know, begin a functioning medical marijuana system in the state. But we'll see. We got 3 days left.
Oh, so that's it. There's 3 days left in the session. So now, Ben Pilar, you're the campaign director at United for Care. United for Care is one of the groups, probably the biggest group, that helped get this Amendment 2 on the ballot twice, actually, and worked on getting it passed. And today, you're urging everybody, if they could, to get up to Tallahassee to lobby your representatives and senators to try to get them to do the right thing here. Phone calls work too, though, for like those of us who are down in South Florida and couldn't get to Tallahassee, right?
Phone calls work, emails work. You know, these people come up here for 60 days every year to be legislators, and there's a tendency to exist in a bubble up in Tallahassee where the only thing that matters is, you know, what happens within a half-mile radius of the Capitol. And when people call and email and go meet with their senators and representatives, they're reminded that there is a world outside the bubble. And they're elected and they're there in that bubble because of voters. And so, you know, you might be cynical about the process, and there's more than enough reason to be cynical about the process. But this stuff does matter. It does matter when they hear from folks.
Yeah, just like it matters when you call your congressional representatives in D.C. Same thing for each state. It just gets less publicized, right? We don't know as much of what's
exactly
going on. Now, in Florida, for instance, as you mentioned, the legislature only has one 60-day session, regular session. They invariably wind up going back for some special sessions, but we have no reason to believe there will be a special session to deal with cannabis. Although it wouldn't be a bad idea, because just looking at how other states are doing with business, and I know, for instance, Colorado, they have recreational cannabis, but let's use them as an example because they were the first in the nation. They're seeing a huge windfall in tax dollars and revenue that Florida could certainly use, couldn't we?
Certainly, although it is almost a certainty that regardless of what passes, there will be no tax revenue associated with it. The legislature has made medical marijuana tax exempt, which ultimately I think for medical marijuana is probably the right thing to do.
It is.
But it, you know, it is nice when dealing with legislators to have that financial incentive as a carrot.
Right. So you'd think then that they would get the message that recreational cannabis might be a really good thing in Florida. After all, it would grow here like the proverbial weed that it is, and it could bring a lot of revenue to the state. But as long as, you know, Rick Scott is governor, that would never happen. Which brings me to my next question, which you may not have an answer to, but is John Morgan going to run for governor?
I have no idea, but I am sure watching this legislative session, it is pushing him in that direction.
Right. For those who don't know, John Morgan is an attorney based in Tampa, in the Tampa Bay area, who was the guy behind United for Care, right? He's the one who got this all started because of a family member.
Yeah, John and I have been doing this for 4 years now. He's the chairman of United for Care. He has put probably close to $10 million of his own money
wow.
into petition drives and advertising over the course of two campaigns. And yeah, he did this in large part because of his brother, Tim, who's been wheelchair bound since he was 18 years old and who uses marijuana to get through the day without having to take, you know, a cocktail of narcotics.
Right. And as I've made no secret of this with my listeners, last summer I was diagnosed with lung cancer, of all things, out of the blue. I'm not a smoker, not a cigarette smoker anyway. And the pain pills that I've been on, I've become physically dependent on. They don't ease the pain anymore. I'm just now addicted to them. It would really be nice to have legal cannabis to help ease some of the painful symptoms and help me get off of the stupid opioids that are highly addictive where cannabis is not. I'm sorry.
Well, and here the irony here is that, you know, a lot of the logic being used by the legislature to restrict, severely restrict access to medical marijuana is, oh, well, we can't let it be another pill mill crisis. Which, of course, ignores the fact that, you know, not only does marijuana have very, very few addictive properties and basically no lethal properties, but mm-hmm. there are studies that show that marijuana saves lives by reducing opiate dependency.
Yeah. So do we have any reason to believe that when this legislative session is over, where there's going to be some way to for us to go forward with medical marijuana, or are we going to have to wait till next year?
No, there's still a couple of days left in the session. They're even talking today about extending the session for
really?
A day. But the bottom line is, you know, the Senate needs to amend the House bill to look a lot more like the Senate bill, and then the House needs to live with it and vote in that bill. And I don't know whether that will happen, but it certainly can happen, and it should happen in the next couple of days. But I could not tell you if anything happens right this moment.
It's
very much wait and see, and a little bit tense here for the final 2-3 days.
Oh, boy, I'll bet. So today is the day. Get on the phone. If you don't know who your Florida representatives are, just go to the Google machine and say, who are my Florida representatives, right? I mean, obviously only if you live in the state of Florida. Is there an easier way to find out?
There is. We have a system set up on our website where you can just punch in your address and it'll tell you exactly who your representative and senator is. I don't unfortunately have an easy link, but I can send it to you if you could tweet it or put it on your site. Or I'm gonna tweet it when we hang up here, and folks can go to my Twitter at @BFGPollara, @Pollara.
And I've got you up
or
on
at Florida for Care.
At Florida for Care, or what about Florida for Care, not United for Care?
Right, United for Care was the campaign. Florida for Care is our advocacy arm.
Ah, okay. So at Florida for Care, I will find you, and I'll retweet your thing, and I'll also put it on the blog today after the show, so people can get there. But in the meantime, you can also just go online. It'll ask who are my Florida state representatives. It should pull it up for you, and make the phone calls today. I mean, they're there.
Yeah.
And as you said, they want to hear from you. I would think that our state representatives get less input from their constituents than on the federal level that our representatives do. So they will look forward to hearing from you, and they need to hear from you. So today is the day to do it.
I don't know if they'll look forward to it, but they will hear you, and they need to hear from you.
There you go. Ben Pollara, campaign director at Florida for Care and United for Care. Thank you so much. Thanks for the hard work you guys are putting in up there. This is really necessary, and people are understanding why I call it Florida, because,
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
There you go. Ben Pollara, Florida for Care, an arm, the action arm of United for Care. Yeah, again, Florida, they do things so back-asswards here. But there's, what did he say, 3 days left in this 60-day session. Hopefully they'll stretch it out another day or two. I will find his tweet. I will retweet it. I will put the information on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com, along with today's podcast. Ooh, by the way, before we break, I've got a little bit of sort of housekeeping information for you. We have a new podcast host, which for most people doesn't mean anything. If you subscribe to the show, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Hopefully you'll get your podcast today just like you always do. If you get it via iTunes or any other podcatcher. If by some chance you don't, though, if it doesn't load as it usually does, go to NicoleSandler.com. Under podcast, under the tabs, you'll find the RSS feed and all that stuff. It should just be a resubscribe kind of thing. I will be monitoring my email closely tonight in case anybody has problems. I already podcasted today's What's News. So if you normally get them just automatically and you haven't gotten it, let me know. All right, because it's something we're working on. So it's going to be a good thing. And let me explain to you a little further what we're going to do. I will still not put the show behind a paywall. I made that promise when I moved online, the day Air America Radio went off the air and I moved my show to the internet. I said I knew a lot of people were still hurting from the Bush, meltdown, as we are. Why wouldn't anyone else be? And I know a lot of people just can't afford to pay for a radio show. So I decided to go the route of NPR, right? Because that's where I started, in public radio. And basically saying, if you can afford to contribute, then I ask you please to do so. So anybody who contributes on a regular monthly basis, or if you've contributed in the past. You know, if you've, like, in the past year and you've made a, you know, some people just do a one, you know, one donation a year, but a nice donation. You will have access to bonus content. And that includes the Monday Music Show. And I'm going to put a whole bunch of other stuff, old interviews, some special stuff. Occasionally I'll record some bonus content that'll go in the vault section of the website. So anyone who's a subscriber or a contributor will have access to that. It may take me a while to get to you because, again, I'm a one-woman show here, but I'm working on it, just so you know, trying to make things a little better and give people a little extra something, a little extra impetus maybe to contribute something. Again, best way to do that is at NicoleSandler.com/donate, or I can't believe I'm saying this, wait a couple of days because we're getting the new Stripe thing, way of using a credit card going so that I don't have to use PayPal anymore. And so if you're a regular monthly contributor through PayPal, you can switch it over to Stripe once I get this going too. All right. I will be putting out an email, hopefully in the next week or so, with all the information in case there's anything you need to do as a subscriber, as a, you know, subscriber to the podcast. We'll figure it out together. Okay. Just, yeah, let me know if you have any troubles. All right. All right, taking off that hat, putting on this hat, we'll take a quick break, we'll check out what's news and come back with Gotta Laugh, because it's Tuesday, so don't go away.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it past the first major milestone in the dump presidency. Much to my shock, while watching MSNBC's Morning Joke on Monday, I saw what appeared to be a Donald Trump campaign ad.
Donald Trump, sworn in as president 100 days ago, and President Trump is making America great again.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
It was. At the end, the graphic reads, paid for by Donald J. Trump for President, Inc. 1,358 days left in his first term, and he's already running re-election ads? I guess it makes sense, as he hasn't stopped doing campaign rallies. In fact, he spent Saturday night marking the end of his 100th day as the apprentice-ident at one of those rallies in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Saturday night, instead of appearing at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the first Oval Office occupant in 36 years to diss the press event. With no star power on hand, it was Daily Show correspondent Hasan Minhaj who roasted the already toasted one.
Gotta address the elephant that's not in the room. The leader of our country is not here. And that's because he lives in Moscow. It is a very long flight. Frederick Douglass isn't here. And that's because he's dead. Someone please tell the president. Free speech is the foundation of an open and liberal democracy. From college campuses to the White House. Only in America can a first generation Indian American Muslim kid get on this stage and make fun of the president. It's 11 p.m. right now. In 4 hours, Donald Trump will be tweeting about how bad Nicki Minaj bombed at this dinner. And that's his right. And I'm proud that all of us are here tonight to defend that right, even if the man in the White House never would.
And Samantha Bee held her own Not the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which saluted the press and benefited the Committee to Protect Journalists.
As much as I might love poking fun at the media, and as much as you all kind of deserve it sometimes, I know your job has never been harder. POTUS has convinced 88% of his fans that you're an enemy of the people. You basically get paid to stand in a cage while a geriatric orangutan and his pet mob scream at you. It's like a reverse zoo. But you carry on. You dig up misdeeds and fraud by the powerful. You expose injustice against the weak, and you continue to fact-check the president as if he might someday get embarrassed. So tonight is for you. Tonight, the president screams at a pen that Katie Turr is not in. Cheers.
Saturday featured hundreds of climate marches around the nation. You know, the activism that the dumb presidency has unleashed, while he led the less than capacity crowd in Harrisburg in a rousing chant.
A large group of Hollywood actors and Washington media are consoling each other in a hotel ballroom in our nation's capital right now.
Cheer up, cheer up, cheer up, cheer up, cheer up, cheer up.
He also marked the unimportant arbitrary milestone of 100 days by granting a few interviews. One with, of course, Fox so-called News, still there, last I checked, though its co-president Bill Shein is the latest casualty.
Well, nobody's safe. I mean, who's safe? The guy's got nuclear weapons. I'd like to say they're very safe. These are great, brave soldiers. These are great troops. And they know this situation. We have 28,000 troops on the line. And they're right there. And so nobody's safe. We're probably not safe over here. If he gets the long-range missiles, we're not safe either.
Five times he said nobody's safe. Well, that's reassuring. He then told Bloomberg he'd be honored to meet with Kim Jong-un.
If it would be appropriate for me to meet with him, I would be honored to do it.
And he invited the Philippines' Duterte to the White House, noting,
you know, he's very popular in the Philippines. He has a very high approval rating in the Philippines, but he's very popular in the Philippines. I look forward to meeting him. If he comes to the White House, that's fine. I look forward to meeting him.
One of the more stunning interviews he gave was on Face the Nation, where he wouldn't answer a direct question. Take health care. He kept insisting that pre-existing conditions were covered in the current outrage the GOP is peddling, even though they aren't. Every time John Dickerson tried to bring it back to that question, he said, but Obamacare.
Obamacare is dead. Obamacare, right now, all the insurance companies are fleeing. Obamacare, John, is dead. We're being compared to Obamacare. Obamacare doesn't work. One thing. No, it's important. I got
to
compare it. I'll tell you who doesn't cover pre-existing conditions. Obamacare. You know why? It's dead.
But his most perplexing statement in the spate of interviews came when he tried to fake his way through a history lesson.
Had Andrew Jackson been a little bit later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. He was a very tough person, but he had a big heart, and he was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there's no reason for this. People don't realize, you know, the Civil War, you think about it, why? People don't ask that question, but why was there the Civil War? Why could that one not have been worked out?
A good gift to commemorate his 100 days in office would be Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, if he could only read. In the meantime...
Later in the same interview, Trump gave Dickerson a tour of the Oval Office.
This is the Resolute desk. It's a great desk with a phenomenal history. This was FDR, it was Ronald Reagan, it was Kennedy. There's some great presidents behind this desk.
Yes, and if you put your ear to it like a seashell, you can hear all of them rolling in their graves.
If you appreciate these What's News updates and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. We are 100% listener supported. For more details, visit NicoleSandler.com/donate.
The Nicole Sandler Show phone pocket is here. Just sign up for a new membership at NicoleSandler.com with a recurring monthly donation of $5 or more, and Nicole will send you a Nicole Sandler Show phone pocket, formerly known as the Knot Pocket, and a gracious personal autographed note of thanks. And, of course, her undying gratitude. Get one while supplies last.
Hello, boys and girls. It's time for Laffy on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello?
Oh, yes. You've reached the Trump loves him some ruthless dictators hotline.
Yes, he does.
Oh, my goodness, you've been smoking too much. Press 1 if you think Trump calling Kim Jong-un a smart cookie was just his way of suggesting an international deal with Keebler is in the works, which must include making Jeff Sessions the head elf.
Yes, 1 beep. My beeper's broken.
I've heard that about you.
Yeah.
Press 2 if you think Trump inviting admitted murderer and Philippines President Duterte to the White House is just a teaser for his new TV pilot, Dinner with Dictators.
Yes, 2.
Press 3 if you think Trump said, I also hope to meet with Andrew Jackson in the very, very, very near future.
Very. It's like incredible. It's going to be terrific.
He always meets with dead guys. I mean, why wouldn't he meet with Andrew Jackson?
Because he doesn't know that he's dead. Yeah.
Ah! Yeah. Anyway, so what if, you know, Andrew Jackson was pro-slavery and killed Native Americans and slavery wasn't negotiable?
You know,
what about it?
They used to have the what used to be called Jefferson Jackson dinners. here in a lot of places. There were like the Democratic Party dinners until they realized, you know, Jefferson and Jackson were not exactly the best examples that we want to base our Democratic Party on. And now they've changed the names. They're no longer the Jefferson Jackson dinners for good reason. You know, there's something else. I was watching John Meacham, who actually wrote the Andrew Jackson biography. And,
right.
And a couple of things. One is he said that Trump, he had spoken to him like around the time, I guess, during the transition before he took office. And he was asking him about, you know, who were his favorite presidents and stuff. He said Andrew Jackson never even came up. This is the Steve Bannon thing. That,
yeah.
You know, that's the reason he's got the Andrew Jackson portrait hanging in the Oval Office now. And Trump doesn't know anything. He doesn't know anything about anything.
No. And he listens, like you were just saying, to the last person he speaks to, if that person is, I guess, pushy enough.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so scary. In fact, you know, we're talking about basically how he jumps, you know, from one position to another. Well, South Korea called him a rugby ball because he bounces all over the place. And it might have been Meacham, I can't remember, on TV, you called him a pinball machine. Because, you know, so
yeah.
So everyone's sort of using type of metaphor.
Yeah, he's all over the place. Well, I love this headline. He just seemed to go crazy. Senior GOP aide stunned by Trump's demented behavior in the last 24 hours. Even the president's inner circle admits it's worried about his mental state. I watched Morning Jerk today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I flip back and forth between them and CNN, but I've been enjoying them because it's funny watching Joe Scarborough having to criticize a Republican. He's all over. The two of them are all over dump. Just like, and what they were saying today is they really said what Scarborough Jerk said is his mother has suffered from dementia for 10 years.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Yes. And Trump.
Wait, do you mean Joe's mother or
Joe's mother? Joe Scarborough's mother. And
yeah.
The stuff Donald Trump says sounds like her. Like they were insinuating that he's like going through like early stages of dementia, maybe not so early.
I don't know. I've lived with several relatives and friends who have gone through stuff like that. I've intimate,
uh-huh.
You know, like caring for them and everything. I don't know. Maybe dementia. I hate to. I'm not one that makes diagnoses like
right.
this. So, you know,
that's the thing.
And I don't like to take dementia that lightly because I don't know if he's got dementia when he's capable of the other things he does. You know, maybe it's just that he's mentally ill in other ways that prevents him from functioning properly. I just hate to use the word dementia, but I definitely think something's wrong with him emotionally.
Well, did you see
you know,
the article? It was from last week or 2 weeks ago. Yes, here it is. Panel of psychiatrists warn Trump has dangerous mental illness.
Now, that makes sense. Makes sense.
Well, and here's the thing. There was a group of psychiatrists at a conference at Yale University. Now, again, it's Yale, so it's not uh-huh. some fly-by-night. I'm looking for a better... okay, here we go. Here's an article. I mean, it's everywhere. It's a New York Magazine, but here's an easily readable one. Five psychiatrists this week gathered at a conference at Yale to sound the alarm on what they believe is President Donald Trump's, quote, dangerous mental illness. Per The Independent, the psychiatrists met at Yale's School of Medicine to talk about Donald Trump's mental health, which they warned was frighteningly unstable. Dr. Mm-hmm. John Gartner, a practicing psychotherapist who advised psychiatric residents at Johns Hopkins University Medical School, said, quote, "We have an ethical responsibility to warn the public about Donald Trump's dangerous mental illness. He's in the past warned that Trump is a psychiatric Frankenstein monster." These psychiatrists at the conference argue that Trump suffers from a particularly malignant case of pathological narcissism, which makes him a danger to the country and the world.
Mm-hmm.
He explained, quote, "Worse than just being a liar or a narcissist, in addition, he is paranoid, delusional, and grandiose thinking and grandiose thinking, and he proved to the country the first day he was president. If Donald Trump really believes he had the largest crowd in history, that's delusional. Now, they also said that they know that, you know, typically psychology professionals refrain from diagnosing public figures whom they haven't personally interviewed. But Dr. Bandy Lee, an assistant clinical professor at the Yale School of Medicine, told the conference that the dangers Trump's mental health present are simply too great to stay silent. As some prominent psychiatrists have noted, his mental health is the elephant in the room, she explained, or he explained. I think the public is really starting to catch on and widely talk about this now. So when
it's
you
hard
have,
to avoid.
Yes. So when you have psychiatrists who don't, as a rule, diagnose someone that they haven't personally met, saying there are too many warning signals here for us to stay,
quiet. Exactly. Well, you know, it would be like an internist diagnosing a cold. You hear it, you see the symptoms, someone's nose is running, they're getting hoarse. You can make an educated assessment if you're a specialist without necessarily having to, you know, go into long sessions with somebody. And I understand that they're qualifying it. You know, yes, we don't know the guy personally, but they're making an educated assessment. And based on repetitive behavior and the things that he says and does, it seems perfectly reasonable.
He is in so far over his head. And that's one of the things that the Morning Jerk crew was saying this today, is that maybe he's finally coming to the realization, right? Like he said last week, wow, this is harder than I thought it would be. I thought it would be easier.
Right.
You thought it would be easier. You know, God, as I'm cutting up the sound today, I had way too much stuff for the 6 minutes for What's New. So I had to cut a lot of it out. You'll notice there was no music in it today. There's so much. The man is certifiable. He's fucking off his gourd. He's like nuts. And with each day, it's like more and more. And the whole round of interviews he did, you know, there's only so much you can fake. And then you say stupid shit like, well, Andrew Jackson, he was angry about the Civil War. You know, if he had a little more time, he would have stopped that. What the fuck are you talking about?
No, I mean, he makes zero sense, and he reverses himself mid-sentence half the time. So, you know, the interviews that I've read and the clips I've seen and the part of the interviews that I saw, it scared me silly. In fact, I just got a news alert. Dr. Doom, the man who predicted the 2008 financial crisis, says Trump tops the list of risks to the global economy. Yeah, so we've got that.
No doubt.
A guy making a diagnosis financially. We've got people doing it psychologically. And then we've got, of course, our foreign policy, which doesn't exist, except for a lot of
bluster. Well, it does exist. That it's frightening because it's being done, you know, his invitation to Duterte, however you say his name, was just off the cuff. He doesn't understand that there's protocol and,
State Department, whatever there is of it, had no idea he did that.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, his own government people are looking at him with the same look we're giving him now. Like, wait a minute, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
We exist here for a reason, and that is so you don't blow the fucking world up.
Right.
So,
well, did you see what he tweeted this morning?
Yes.
At 9:01 a.m., he tweeted, "The reason for the plan negotiated between the Republicans and Democrats is that we need 60 votes in the Senate, which are not there. And then at 9:07, he continued, "either elect more Republican senators in 2018 or change the rules now to 51%. Our country needs a good shutdown in September to fix mess." And apparently,
and then Mitch McConnell came out and said, no.
No, we don't, because what Trump is talking about there is changing the filibuster rules for legislation, and Mitch McConnell is saying hell no, because Mitch McConnell sees the writing on the wall, which is that it's very likely the Democrats, if he keeps on this path, Democrats could take back the House and the Senate in 2018. Please, please, please. And then if there's no filibuster, we get everything we want through. As it is, you have to hope that Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Anthony Kennedy and the rest of them stay healthy.
There's rumors, I keep reading the same thing over and over again about how what's his name is thinking of stepping down.
Which one?
The GOP is going nuts. What's his name?
Who? Which one?
I'm pretty sure it was Kennedy, but
Kennedy.
Kennedy
is the swing vote, which you know. I would guess and he's one of the older ones on the court.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, the Republicans would love that if he stepped down because he's lately has been a swing vote. And if they could turn him into a reliable Republican vote for them, they'd be thrilled.
Oh yeah. Wouldn't that be swell? Well, if you want to do TweetSpot, because we're pretty much covering everything
and,
on it.
Yes. And I've got sound on a lot of the things. So let's do it. Do it.
Welcome to my tweet spot.
Okay, so you go and I have sound.
Okay, so Steve Kopack, who is a CNBC guy, he was basically just quoting Trump. He says, he's very popular in the Philippines. He has a very high approval rating, which is his standard. I mean, look at him. He's favorably comparing this nutcase
here
to and with admiration and praise for,
and the thing about he has a very high approval rating. Oh my God, listen.
He's very popular in the Philippines. He has a very high approval rating in the Philippines, but he's very popular in the Philippines.
Oh my God. It's the third time he said he's very popular in the Philippines.
I look forward to meeting him. If he comes to the White House, that's fine. I look forward to meeting him.
Okay, so in, what was that? A 25-second clip. He repeated himself, 13 seconds, sorry. He said he's very popular in the Philippines three times, and I look forward to meeting him twice. The man, he's constantly repeating himself, but, and that's ignoring the content of what he's saying, which is batshit crazy.
It's insane. Well, this is what he does. He holds up anyone who he considers a strong, tough guy to very high esteem, praises them because that's what he wants. He wants to get praise back.
Yes.
He wants to get praise from everybody.
And and that's all it is. You'll notice during the thing with on Face the Nation when John Dickerson was asking him about about Obama, what happened, with Obama. And he's like, well, he was nice to me at first. And then we had our differences. This is all he cares about is if someone's nice to him, which has nothing to do with anything. I don't care if they're nice to you. That's not what this is about. But for him,
well, it's
meaningless everything.
Because when somebody like Duterte is going to be nice to you, it's meaningless. They're stroking you to get what they want. And then they're looking at you like you're an idiot.
Well, that's how it is with all of these people.
With all of them. And he doesn't even realize that they're all looking at him like he's an idiot.
Right.
The people who he's putting up there on little tiny pedestals with his little tiny hands and his tiny, tiny penis, they're all looking at him like he's shorter than they are. He's this nutcase that they can walk all over. And then what will happen? What will happen? Then it'll hit him. Oh, wow. Wait a minute.
They didn't mean it. Oh,
and then it'll blow somebody up.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Ah!
Right.
Ah! Okay. So then Christina Wilkie from HuffPost, she's the amazing, I love her. She's the one who's reporting in all the people who are contacting her about the donations in fake names. Have you seen that? She tweeted today, and I wish I could dig up the tweet, but it's too late. But anyway, she tweeted, he's obviously managed to lead a country. This is
she was
Spicer on Kim Jong-un. Yeah.
Right.
He's obviously managed to lead a country forward. I can't even say that word without laughing. He's a young person to be leading a country with nuclear weapons.
Yeah, well,
he's
that
leading
was
the country forward.
Yeah. Well, that was Spicer sort of paraphrasing Dumps very well his weird compliments to Kim Jong-un. This one,
I can tell you this, and a lot of people don't like when I say it, but he was a young man of 26 or 27 when he took over from his father. A lot of people, I'm sure, tried to take that power away, whether it was his uncle or anybody else, and he was able to do it. So obviously he's a pretty smart cookie.
A pretty smart cookie. When I heard that, my jaw dropped. First of all, what is the translation? How do you think? How do you think that translates into Korean?
Oh, well, exactly. As what's his name? Kim Jong-un starves his citizens and kills journalists and threatens to bomb the United States to smithereens, and who hacked, you know, a big company. I mean, this is the guy who he's calling a smart cookie.
Yes.
A smart cookie.
A smart cookie. And then he said this about him.
We have a potentially very bad situation that we will meet in the toughest of all manners, if we have to do that. If it would be appropriate for me to meet with him, I would be honored to do it.
He would be honored to do it?
Honored.
I mean, it's his choice of words.
Under the right circumstances.
Under the right circumstances, of course.
See, now,
but
that's the
honored,
thing. That's the thing. It's one thing to say, you know, I'd be willing to do a one-on-one with him. I mean, Obama said, you know, people say that, whether you mean it or not even. You know, they put it out there. Maybe there could be some positive talk somewhere mm-hmm. along the line. Mm-hmm. But to come out and use the wording he uses with the praise
honored.
And the adulation.
Yes. He just
that's
doesn't get it. You know, it's so funny that that was your press one for today, because, you know, each day I struggle to come up with a name for what's news. I mean, it's a newscast. So I wrote today, it was Dumps Loves Despots.
There you go. There you go. So, loves him some ruthless dictators.
Yeah.
It's also embarrassing. And it's also showing, as you started to say just a second ago, it's showing all those dictatory leaders that we're kissing their ass, that we're lowering our esteem among the, you know, globally, and that they can pretty much just dismiss us now.
Yeah,
we're not the leaders that we used to be in the eyes of a lot of countries right now.
Hell no, hell.
They're hoping.
Hell no.
You know.
Yeah.
But no, we just lost it right there. Thank you, Trump, for destroying our reputation around the world. That's wonderful. And now we have no credibility because of you, and everything you say is a lie, and everything you represent. Oh, my God, today I didn't watch it because I was watching the Hillary interview, sort of. I was sort of half watching. But what's his name? Oh, my God, his cabinet guy. Name was
which
right
one?
Out of my head. Mulvaney.
Okay, oh, Mick Mulvaney.
Mulvaney's
yes.
like a little rabid dog.
Yeah, yes, he is.
And I was reading people's tweets, and he was out there lying for the liar, you know?
Well, today, by the way, is the special election in South Carolina to fill his seat, which I heard nothing about. I don't know if the, you know, it's not a good, South Carolina is not great for Democrats. But again, the Democratic Party should be on top of every single one of these races. I mean,
absolutely.
They should be out in force, because anything is possible right now.
I totally agree. And they didn't do it for, I'm so bad with names. Ossoff, they didn't do it for Ossoff until, you know.
They didn't do it in Kansas. And the next one, and the one that's great is this one in Montana. And I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name, but he's a
Swift. With a W. Quist.
With a Q. Yes, Quist. And in fact, he's a country singer and rancher or something. And he told the Democratic Party, "I don't want you here." He said, "If Bernie wants to come, that's great, but Tom Perez can stay home."
Yes. Well, you know what? You know, the DNC is saying under Perez, however you say his name, that they want a 50-state strategy, but they're not doing that.
Right.
Maybe they mean presidential elections.
Of course.
They should be doing it locally.
They should
be doing it for school boards.
Right. And I get why these school boards, there are so many races, but when there are special congressional elections, these are the only ones going on right now.
They could put in a good word. They don't have to spend money.
Right.
But they could just make a statement.
Or
you know?
Do something.
They could
put some manpower. Get some, you know, volunteers down there.
Because I know a guy who ran for school board in my neighborhood years ago, a friend of mine. And he had no money. I mean, I knew he had no money before he even ran. And he had no money, obviously, to run because he had no money for his own life, you know.
Right.
And so, of course, he lost because he had no signs. He had no nothing.
Right.
And if somebody doesn't help you, and you're a worthy opponent to some idiot, you know, and so the DNC or the DCCC or the whatever it is, they should do the bare minimum that they can. But they don't even make themselves known. You don't hear anything from them. Twitter's free. Yeah, they could do it
right,
on Twitter.
Of course. And, you know, the thing is, fuck the Democratic Party. There are so many other groups. Ridiculous. And if you're going to run for office and you're a progressive, get in touch with Progressive Democrats of America. Get in touch with Democracy for America. They do their night school thing, which is an online activist training program. There are so the PCCC, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, there are boldprogressives.org. There are so many groups out there who are thrilled to give you some help. So, right. Yeah. So, you know.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Okay. On to tweet number 3.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Okay. This one's a killer. Ben Pershing tweeted this one out from the National Journal. This was from Variety, actually. Mm-hmm. Wilbur Ross says the Syria missile strike was, quote, after dinner entertainment when he was at Mar-a-Lago, or when they were at Mar-a-Lago, just as dessert. This is a quote. Just yep. as dessert was being served. The president explained to Mr. Xi he had something he wanted to tell him. Did I say that right, Mr. Xi?
Yeah, close enough.
Which was the launching of 59 missiles into Syria, Ross said. It was in lieu of having after-dinner entertainment, unquote. As the crowd laughed, Ross added, quote, the thing was, it didn't cost the president anything to have that entertainment.
No, it just cost us millions and millions of dollars. This is, I mean, how condescending and shitty.
I mean, you're talking about missiles. You're talking about death. You're talking about huge amounts of money. You're talking about a major move. And you're doing it over your chocolate cake, giggling, getting your nails done and your feet rubbed. I mean, talk about elitist. You know, they went after Obama mercilessly from the day he ran, they always had him with his nose in the air, those pictures of Obama with his nose in the air in the beginning when he was campaigning, when they had a little crown on him and they would make fun of his elitism. And in the meantime, their guy claims to be a billionaire. He spends all his time at his country club where you have to pay $200,000 to join.
Yes.
And that's okay with them because, you know, he's a businessman.
Amazing. And we're drunken, you know, trust fund babies, post Instagram pictures of them taking a selfie with Donald Trump wearing his stupid Make America Great Again golf hat. Like,
as long as you have money, you have access.
That's
to Trump.
Right. And remember, their dinner was out there, like on the terrace, where in plain view of everybody else. I mean, it's really, there is Camp David, you know, for things like this. If Dump doesn't want to entertain world leaders at the White House, which is where he was supposed to be, then they can go to Camp David, which is set up for these things, not a private club owned by Dump who makes money off of this shit.
Exactly. Meanwhile, he and Putin had a little talk on the phone, and they were talking coordination against terrorism, they said. And they claimed, I'm sorry?
Trump and Putin? Who? What?
Trumpy and Putin apparently talked on the phone.
When?
And it said, I tweeted this 18 minutes ago.
Oh.
Putin, Trump agree to work together in North Korea.
They
get along so well, don't they?
Oh, yes.
It says there, Eamon Javers tweeted out, White House readout on Trump-Putin call. They agreed that the suffering in Syria has gone on for far too long. The conversation was a very good one and included the discussion of safe or de-escalation zones to achieve lasting peace.
Amazing.
Trump and Putin are going to create lasting peace.
Yeah, and if you believe that, I've got some swampland not too far from here. I'll sell it to you cheap.
That's right.
Cheap.
Unbelievable. Cheap. Unbelievable. Okay, let's do our next outrage, which is...
Yes, oh my God, and I have this sound too.
Oh, I'm so glad you do, because the tweet, for some reason, was deleted, but
Brooks... Mo Brooks is a congressman from where? I want to say like
is
Alabama. I have no idea.
Oh, is it?
No, I don't remember. Know. But to me, Mo Brooks sounds like Alabama. And after what he said, it really sounds like the Deep South. But I don't know where he's from.
Go ahead and play it.
Let me play it. This is Representative Congressman Mo Brooks.
My understanding is that it will allow insurance companies to require people who have higher health care costs to contribute more to the insurance pool that helps offset all these costs, thereby reducing the cost to those people who lead good lives, they're healthy, you know, they've done the things to keep their bodies healthy. And right now, those are the people who've done things the right way that are seeing their costs skyrocketing.
Yeah, he is from Alabama, so I was right.
Yes, he is. I just looked him up. You were right. You're good.
And sometimes you know, sometimes things just stick in my mind. Okay, so people who are sick aren't living their lives the right ways. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, those you filthy cancer patients, you can't get your acts together. You're always into something.
Okay. Okay.
You know, my son got Crohn's when he was 9.
Right. Well, I got cancer. He's saying that was my fault that I got cancer.
Yeah, you're a terrible.
By the way,
Did
you hear Jimmy Kimmel? What happened?
Yes.
Jimmy Kimmel is a crier. So he
cried. Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh my God. Well, he cried after Don Rickles died. You've got to Google Jimmy Kimmel. Don Rickles, and watch his monologue the day after Don Rickles died. He cried throughout the whole thing. I was almost in tears. But
I cried when I saw the one, you know, from last night.
Is understandable. So his baby was born a week ago, and the baby was born with a congenitive heart defect. And so he went on, he did the whole story, but then I'm just going to play a couple of minutes of this because, he went into a pretty good rant here.
President Trump last month proposed a $6 billion cut in funding to the National Institute of Health. And thank God our congressman, made a deal last night to not go along with that. They actually increased funding by $2 billion. And I applaud them for doing that. Because...
Yep.
More than 40% of the people who would have been affected by those cuts of the National Institute of Health are children, and it would have a major impact on a lot of great places, including Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, which is so unbelievably sad to me. We were brought up to believe that we live in the greatest country in the world, but until a few years ago, millions and millions of us had no access to health insurance at all. You know, before 2014, if you were born with congenital heart disease like my son was, there was a good chance you'd never be able to get health insurance because you had a pre-existing condition. You were born with a pre-existing condition. If your parents didn't have medical insurance, you might not live long enough to even get denied because of a pre-existing condition. If your baby is going to die, and it doesn't have to, it shouldn't matter how much money you make. I think that's something that whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or something else, we all agree on that, right? I mean, we do.
Okay. He went on from there, but he made a really, really good point. And to Mo Brooks, hey, Mo Brooks, fuck you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got one more outrage for you that wasn't on the thing I gave because it just came out a little bit ago, 7 minutes ago. Susan Hennessy, she's a Lawfare managing editor, she says here. But Susan Hennessy's really good. I like her tweets.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Here's her first one. She was retweeting somebody breaking Trump expected to sign religious liberty executive order Thursday, triumph for Pence. And then she says, but where are Ivanka and Jared, who, according to two anonymous White House sources, in quotes, were voice of tolerance in killing this in February, off skiing? And then she says, anonymous White House sources just seem so sure Ivanka and Jared felt exactly the same about LGBT rights as demographic most likely to buy her purses.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. But can you even... And people who think that Pence would be too much better than Trump are sadly mistaken.
No, well, he would be.
He's a theocrat.
He would turn, you know, Christian Sharia law. We would have, you know, for all their screaming about Sharia law, they want to institute their own Sharia law. They want to make Christianity the law of the land and make that the state religion. That's what Mike Pence is.
He, to me, is, I call him the stealth Trump. He's a stealth Trump wrapped in piety. He is, you know, soft-spoken. He slithers in. He gets along with Congress. They respect him. He gets more things done. Trump sends him over. Trump won't go over there anymore. He sends Pence over there to try to do his dirty work. So I'm not real excited about impeachment, even though I am. But you know what I mean? It's like, right, yay, right. But oh, shit, look what we have now.
Yeah, well, here's the problem. Trump is insane. He and is so unaware of how anything works in D.C., in the law, in Congress, how a bill becomes a law. Someone needs to get him the Schoolhouse Rocks box set so that he can, you know, go seriously, because he doesn't even have the most rudimentary of information of how things work, how government works. He needs to go back to eighth grade and take a civics class. Now, if they do impeach him, look, Pence scares the fuck out of me because he is unhinged. He's a religious zealot. But I also don't think Pence would get us into World War III. I don't think Trump would do it on purpose, but he very easily could do it accidentally because he's such a moron.
I couldn't hear some of that, but I do want to add that he could be easily swept up with the impeachment because he was complicit.
Yes.
He lied outright about knowing about Flynn.
But then it's Paul Ryan.
Oh, God.
Right? I think third in line is Speaker of the House. And then after Speaker of the House, I believe it's Secretary of State. So you go down the line of succession and you have to get like 12 in before you get to a Democrat, I believe.
Oh,
who's,
no.
Yeah.
We're so screwed.
We are so screwed. 1,357 days or something left.
Oh,
yeah, I know. And on that note, we're out of time. Gotta Laugh. Find her on the Twitters at Gotta Laugh, 2 T's, 2 F's, and at Laffy's Place at NicoleSandler.com. Any final parting words? All right.
Hear the last few things you said, but other than that, love you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. With that, we're done. I'm not sure what we're doing tomorrow, but we'll figure something out. I promise you. And it will be fabulous. It'll just be terrific. I'll leave you with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.
It's Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017.
I'm here to make a statement about the stupidity of denying climate change.
The People's Climate March draws hundreds of thousands in the sweltering heat. Trump's EPA deletes climate change from its website. Last-minute government funding deal ignores Trump's proposed environmental cuts. Largest electric utility in Iowa to go 100% renewable. Plus,
this executive order starts the process of opening offshore areas to job-creating energy exploration.
Trump rolls back oil spill safety regulations implemented after the BP Gulf oil disaster.
All of those disasters and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We talk about Assad gassing people. We're gassing them, too. We're just doing it slower with CO2.
Ouch. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it seems only appropriate that we would have record-breaking heat at the end of April on the day that the people are marching for climate.
Yes, yes, it does. It was a massive People's Climate March that flooded the streets of Washington, D.C. on a sweltering Saturday. Official estimates put it at about 200,000 people, larger than the March for Science and a certain president's inauguration. In D.C. and nearly 400 sister marches around the country, the Climate March united a broad spectrum of environmental groups, Native American, labor, and racial justice organizations demanding action on climate change and blasting the Trump administration's aggressive anti-environment cutbacks on the 100th day of his presidency.
If something isn't done, the stakes are enormous because they're talking about more pollution that's going to put more pollution in the air, like arsenic and mercury, in our water, and that affects the air our kids breathe and the water they drink.
The organizers of the Climate March say the goal now is to rally the public to defend pollution protections and spur voters to vote for climate hawk candidates in the 2018 congressional elections. As you mentioned, the day of the march tied the record for the hottest April 29th in D.C. history. But worse, the night before the march, a significant temperature record was broken when overnight temperatures failed to cool down and drop below 70 degrees. Mm. That's the first time that's ever happened in any April in the District of Columbia. The day before the climate march, President Donald Trump signed an executive order to expand offshore drilling in Arctic and Atlantic regions previously protected by President Obama. But that order also rolled back safety regulations on offshore drilling that were put in place after the BP oil disaster in the Gulf.
Because of course it did.
Yep, that was the worst in the nation's history.
The executive order or the BP oil spill?
That's a good question. Trump's order also explicitly removed Native American tribes in Alaska from their seat on the Bering Sea Advisory Council.
Yeah, well, remember, he's a big fan of Andrew Jackson, who didn't like Native Americans either.
Nope. The night before the march, the Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency deleted nearly all references to climate change from its website, including info on the causes and impacts of climate change that have been in place since 1997. The site now says it's being updated to remove outdated information and will be rewritten to reflect the agency's new direction under President Trump, and that removing the information was necessary to prevent confusion.
Outdated information, eh?
Yeah. The Interior Department also quietly stripped its pages of information on climate change and its impact on public lands.
Hey, if it's not on the website, it didn't happen.
Meanwhile, a deal reached in Congress late Sunday night to avoid a shutdown and fund the government through September does not contain drastic budget cuts proposed by the Trump administration.
Does not contain?
Nope. The EPA gets a 1% budget cut, but no staff cuts. If Trump signs the deal, budget increases are in store for the National Park Service, NOAA, and the Department of Energy's Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency Programs.
But I thought Donald Trump was insisting on a 30% cut to the EPA.
Oh, he still is. That will just have to wait until later.
So sad.
Plus, some good news, the deal also extends permanent funding for retired coal miners' health care. In Ohio, the company that owns the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners, reported spilling 2 million gallons of drilling fluids into two Ohio wetlands in the process of constructing a 700-mile pipeline. The Ohio EPA says the spilled drilling fluid isn't exactly toxic, but the sheer volume of 2 million gallons could affect water chemistry and potentially suffocate wildlife. Finally, some good news. The largest electric utility in Iowa is going 100% renewable. MidAmerica Energy is investing $2 billion to build more than 1,000 new wind turbines with the goal of generating 100% of its electricity from clean sources within 2 years. The CEO says wind energy keeps electricity rates down because, quote, the beauty of wind is there's no fuel costs.
Way to go, Iowa. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Iowa.